We need a player with a future, not a past. Here. Jack Roosevelt Robinson. Four-sport college man, not a UCLA. That means he's played with white boys. Playing for the Kansas City Monarchs. 26 years old. He's batting 350. 350. Methodist. Commissioned Army officer.
He was court-martialed. He's a troublemaker. Oh, he argues with umpires. A quick temper is his reputation.
Well, what was he court-martialed for?
Wouldn't sit in the back of a military bus. Fort Hood, Texas. Driver asked him to move back. MPs had to take him off.
Well, there, you see?
I see he resents segregation. If he were white, he'd call that spirit. Robinson's a Methodist. I'm a Methodist. God's a Methodist. We can't go wrong. Find him. Bring him here.
How are you, fellas? You know, I'm looking for your shortstop. You Jackie Robinson?
Who are you? Mr. Ricky, what's this about?
This is about baseball, Jackie. I see you starting in spring with our affiliate in Montreal. If you make it there, try it down here, with the Dodgers, with the white Brooklyn Dodgers. I'll pay you $600 a month, and a $3,500 bonus when you sign the contract. Is that agreeable?
Yes, that's fine.
There's one condition. I know you can hit behind the runner, that you can read a pitch. One question is, can you control your temper?
My temper?
Yes, your temper. What are you, deaf? A black man in white baseball. Can you imagine the reaction? The vitriol? Dodgers check into a hotel, a decent, good hotel. You're worn out from the road. Some clerk won't give you the pen to sign in with. We got no room for you, boy. Not even down in the coal bin where you belong. Team stops at a restaurant. Waiter won't take your order. Didn't you see the sign on the door? What are you gonna do then? Fight him? Ruin all my plans?
You want a player who doesn't have the guts to fight back?
No. No. I want a player who's got the guts not to fight back. People aren't gonna like this. They're gonna do anything to get you to react. Echo a curse with a curse, and they'll hear only yours. Follow a blow with a blow, and they'll say the Negro lost his temper, that the Negro does not belong. Your enemy will be out in force, and you cannot meet him on his own low ground. We win with hitting, running, fielding, only that. We win if the world is convinced of two things, that you are a fine gentleman and a great baseball player. Like our Savior, you gotta have the guts to turn the other cheek. Can you do it?
You give me a uniform. You give me a a number on my back. And I'll give you the guts.
You know, every great person, whoever was, who's ever been, has gone through some element of suffering in some way, shape, or form in their life. I mean, you don't get to be the kind of person that Jackie Robinson was that changed the face of not only our culture, but our sports culture, many, many, many faces, without going through some degree of difficulty that shapes you for the next task. And today we're going to take a look at this. My name's Kurt. Great to have you here today. Really excited you've chosen to join us if it's your first time or if you're here every week with us. And we're going to be taking a look at this big app, as Eric said, of suffering. And, you know, just a kind of a caveat as we begin this today. You know, I know there's probably some of us who are like, suffering, oh good, I've always wondered that. I want to kind of wrap my mind around why and how. And maybe you're in the midst of suffering right now, and so you're looking for some help in this. And I just want to let you know that if I were having a one-on-one discussion with you on my back patio, likely I would be probably saying different things to you than I'm going to be saying, you know, as I share today. I'd probably be saying things in a different way. I'm not really trying to personally counsel anyone today, because that would take like a different skill set, a different level of tact if we were doing one-on-one stuff. But I really want us to get a 30,000-foot view of this issue, you know, and some of the applications we can make, some of the advantages that come when suffering comes our way. And you might be put off a little bit by some things I say if you're really dealing with some difficult stuff. But no, I'm not trying to salve all the wounds today, but I am trying to help us see how God desires to grow us through whatever we're going through. So, I know that for many of us, we have stories, we have people we know, maybe somebody in our family. You know, maybe you've had somebody that's had terminal illness that's close to you, a friend, a family member, a child, a parent. In some way, God showed up and did a miraculous healing and wrapped everything up nice and tidy in a bow and got this nice package and everything worked out exactly the way you want it. We long for those stories. And for as many of those as there are, there's somebody likely right next to you who can say, well, what about me? I mean, I lost a child. I had a parent who had terminal illness. And God never showed up in that way. What about me? You know, some of us are getting a second opinion, and as you've gotten that, the prognosis is still the same. You know, what about me? You know, for those of us who maybe say, what about me? I'm divorced. I mean, I've divorced. And divorce is actually much more painful, at least according to research, than any kind of death of a spouse. I mean, the ripping that takes place, the tearing that happens in the midst of divorce. What about me? I mean, for some of us, you know, we've, for our whole life, been Cubs fans. And the pain, you know, of another year. I mean, what about me? I mean, listen, I'm going to pull any humor I can today, right? This isn't all depressing. There's some of the, you know, there's going to be some pieces in this. But, you know, the same old story, you know, that's been true for every corner of the world, through every time frame, through every culture, through every racial, you know, race of the world, through every economic condition. It's the same old issue of suffering. It's the oldest problem that there is in the world. And so for us to fully understand this today, I want us to go back to the oldest book of the Bible, which is the book of Job. Some of you thought it was the book of Genesis. Book of Genesis records the oldest stuff. Book of Job, it kind of scholars are united that that's likely the oldest written, document that we have when it comes to the Bible. And you might not be real familiar with the book of Job. You've probably heard the phrase, you know, oh, they have the patience of Job. Maybe you've heard that. Well, that actually refers to this book that deals with this story of suffering that we find in the Old Testament. And so here's kind of the basic synopsis of how Job starts. Job is an upstanding man. He's an amazingly righteous man. All right, Job has a heart for God. He's always doing the right thing. He's an incredible businessman. He's got many, many businesses. He's wealthy. He stewards his business as well. You know, he's an honorable person of upstanding character in the community. He's got a great family. His family's all pointed, going in the right direction. And then all of a sudden, two characters kind of interact in the very first chapter of Job. And it's God and Satan having this interaction. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, people kind of debate, was it a literal conversation, this conversation they have? Was it figurative, we don't really know, but nonetheless, we're queued up right away and seeing that there is this kind of butting of heads, these two forces that are against each other right off the bat. And basically God says to Satan, he says, oh, Satan, look at my man Job down there. I mean, there is not a man in my kingdom, in all of my world, that's more righteous and upstanding than that guy right there. I love Job. Job is phenomenal. He always honors me. And Satan's kind of like, come on, God. I mean, seriously. I mean, of course he's honoring you. Of course he's upstanding because his life's going great. There's nothing going wrong in his life. You know, let me open up a little whoop-ass on him. Let me see if his life will, you know, maybe, let's see if he honors you if I like kind of bring something to him. And God says, you know what? That's fine. That's fine. With parameters, you can go to him. You just have to not touch him physically. And so, Job has no awareness that this is going on, by the way. I mean, he has no awareness of this conversation. He's out doing his gig. He's, you know, living his life. And all of a sudden, one of his messengers comes panting, running up to him. Job, you'll never believe it. The Sabians, they came and they just wiped off all of our oxen and the shepherds out in the field that you owned. They're gone. I mean, totally gone. And he kind of begins to debrief what took place. And while he's sharing that, another messenger runs up. And this messenger's like, Job, this fire from heaven just came down and just totally scorched all the sheep in the pasture, the shepherds, your whole flock is gone. And before he could even get done telling about that, another messenger comes and says, you know, Job, the Chaldeans, I mean, they came and they took all of your oxen, all of your servants who were caring for the oxen. I mean, they're just gone, totally off the planet. They just wiped them out. And yet while that servant, that messenger was still talking, one more came and said, Job, you'll never believe this. Your family, your sons, your daughters, they're all eating at your oldest son's house, having food and wine, and this great wind came and just totally collapsed the house like a hurricane, and they all died. This, my friends, is a bad day. I mean, it is a bad, bad day, right? I mean, this is one of those moments, and Job, I mean, he's grief-stricken. I mean, his world is rocked, and here's what it says in Job chapter 1. It says, then Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head and fell on the ground and worshipped. He said, Naked I come from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. That would make a great song, by the way. Somebody ought to write something about that. In all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. Look at that. In all of this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, all this stuff happens. Job is actually not immune to suffering, and through this, he rips his clothes, he shaves his head, he gets down on the dirt of the ground. You know what he does? He worships. What is he doing down there? What is he worshiping? Why is he worshiping? He's not having like happy, clappy worship time. I've got the joy. He's not doing that deal, all right? If we think that's all worship. No, you know what he's doing? He's actually acknowledging God. That's what worship is when we acknowledge God, when we turn, have a connect with God, a conversation with God. This can happen any place. You could connect with God in your cubicle at work. You could connect with God in front of, you know, the kitchen sink at home. You could connect with God in front of the drill press in the shop, wherever it might be. He literally connects with God in this moment. He says, God, I have no idea what's going on right here. This totally surprised me. Didn't see this coming. I have no idea how this fits into the grand scheme of life and you and making sense of everything I've known being gone. And yet, I'm trying not to hold it against you, God. This is what Job does right here. So back to the conversation with Satan and God. I mean, God's like, Satan, look, my man Job, man, he's rock solid. He has not come against me. And Satan says, well, come on, God. I mean, that's because you put a hedge of protection around him. I mean, you told me I couldn't touch him physically. Let me touch him physically, and then let's see what he does. So God says, well, okay. You can touch him, but you cannot kill him. You must spare his life. And of course, if you're familiar with the story, and all these diseases come Job's way, and boils, and, you know, puss, you know, all over his skin, and blisters, and it gets so bad, he like breaks a jar, takes a shard of glass, and just begins to scrape his skin because it's so uncomfortable. And then, like, you know, he has these friends that come around him, and they're trying to be an encouragement to him. They come and just kind of be with him. In fact, here's what it says. They're trying to help him. Here's what it says. It says, they raised their voices and wept. This is our friends doing this. They raised their voices and wept and tore their robes, just as Job had, and sprinkled dust on their heads toward heaven. And they sat with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was very great. You know, when you are suffering, you want friends like this Right? I mean, you don't want all the trite answers. You don't want the, like, you know, cheesy Christian sayings like "let go" and "let God." You know, those don't work. I mean, you don't want to hear that. You know, these are brilliant friends right here. They just come and sit and go, "Oh, Job. Oh man, I don't even know what to say." I mean, there's not even words for this moment right now. I mean, they're brilliant. Now, they're going to become jerk friends in just a moment, all right? They're going to turn a corner, and they're going to do all the wrong things. But right now, they're like brilliant, you know? And there's a couple ways to look at this, you know, when these things happen. You know, the first way is this, you know, we can begin this discussion of the problem of good and evil and why is suffering allowed in the world. And, you know, we can talk about free choice and free will, and we're not robots, and because of that, you know, we can have that conversation. The problem with that is when you're personally suffering, that doesn't do any good. I mean, when you're personally suffering and there's something really big, I mean, to talk about how the cosmos was put together and, you know, to talk about, you know, the biblical themes that run through the scriptures, you know, when you're hurting and bleeding, that doesn't matter. You know, the bigger question you're trying to answer is, how do I handle this? I mean, what do I do with this experience that I'm in right now? And I feel a little odd talking about this, to be honest with you, because, you know, I'm kind of a neophyte, compared to some of you when it comes to suffering. I mean, on the index level of suffering, I mean, I've not had nearly the suffering that some of you have, and yet I've had suffering, and I've had some difficulty. I remember, at the age of 16, probably one of my earliest remembrances of really, really struggling. I'd lost one of my close friends, the captain of our baseball team, basketball team, grown up playing all the sports with him, and he's hit head-on car collision, just took his life instantly. And that just, you know, unleashed all of this emotion and grief and, you know, this uncertainty and anger, all kinds of things. I mean, no parent should ever get a call at 11:45 saying your son was just in a head-on car accident. And to make it worse, I mean, the woman that hit him was a Christ follower. She was a Christian. Some of you had a heart condition that played out at the wheel. And you're like, why, God? I mean, why would you take two lives? And why somebody who's even following? Why? You know, and I had a lot of angst, and that's not, it doesn't even compare to the angst that, you know, his family must have felt to watch their son, to put their son in a grave. I mean, no parent should ever have to bury their kid. And I remember this fear that just kind of came over me, and I don't know if it was the fear of uncertainty, of, you know, what's life going to be like at school without him? What's, am I ever going to be able to step on the basketball court without our floor general? I mean, it's just going to be different. He's not there anymore. You know, I remember thinking, is this a fear of faith? I mean, my faith is hurting right now. I mean, is that what I'm afraid of? Is that why I'm so angry? I don't know. I was trying to, you know, I don't even know how to act. I don't know how to behave. I don't know what to say. In that moment, I mean, it's just like, I don't know. And listen, I was not Job, I'm gonna be honest with you. I cursed God in that moment. And I remember saying things like, God, you know, you say you're a protector. Great job, way to go. You know, you say you're a protector. You say you value life, but I'm not seeing it. I don't know if I was challenging God. I don't know what it was. I was 16. I mean, you know, and there's some health in that to some degree, you know, when we kind of, you know, express that to God, it actually shows that we're in relationship with God. I mean, there's a whole book in the Bible called Lamentations where people just lament on and on about all kinds of painful stuff. You know, God can handle it. It shows us God's self-esteem is fine. He's not going to get rocked when we, like, are like, God, what? And yet at the same time, I realized quickly, man, I've got to get out of this place. This is not a good place to be. And I realized, you know, that when you are suffering, when I'm suffering, you know, strange things happen to you. You think strange things. You do strange things. It's normal. It's what we all do. And yet I realized a couple things in that moment that have carried with, you know, through the rest of my life. They've become more fleshed out over the years. But I learned then that suffering is a part of life. And I'll say to you, suffering is going to be a part of your life. And I learned something else, which is a harder pill to swallow. And that was that for me, probably my greatest days of suffering were yet to come. And I'll say to you, likely, regardless of what's going on in your life right now, if it's good, if you're on top of the world or you're in a really low place, there's a good chance your worst days of suffering are yet to come. And some of you are like, why did I come to church today, by the way? How long? I mean, I came in here to feel good. I feel like crap right now. I mean, you know, listen, this is a reality. And so if suffering is a reality of life, then we what do we do with it? How do we go through it? And so we've got some apps. There's some very specific applications we take from this story and others we're going to look at in these moments where we're struggling. So 5 apps for suffering. The first is this. Suffering forces us to point to at God. That's right, I made up a word there, twat. All right, to at, all right, that's a very strategic word. See, when we're suffering, we either point to God, we say, God, man, I don't understand this. We're like, Job, God, help me make sense. Help me understand what you're doing in the bigger scheme. God, I need help right now. I just don't know that I can go through this. We either do that or we point at God. Way to go, God. God, that's what I was doing. God, I think you say you're a protector, man. You're doing a great job. My friend died. Great job. Way to go. I mean, I'm better off than most people. I'm not as bad as some people, and yet I'm doing worse than them. Explain this, God. See, we either point to God or we point at God. Now, it's interesting because just this past week, I was watching some of the 9/11 remembrances, which was, you know, really fascinating, hard to believe. It's been 12 years since that event that for me, I know probably for many of us, that's probably the biggest tragedy, the biggest moment in our national history that our country just really was rocked. And some cool stuff that comes out of that. I mean, you remember that in those moments, you see the best of people in those moments. Sometimes you see the best of people. I mean, people rushing to the melee, people rushing to the carnage, trying to help others, putting their own safety aside. I mean, it brings out the best in individuals, but I was also reminded it brings out the worst. I mean, I immediately was reminded of all the finger pointing that started happening, right? Oh, George Bush he knew this, he could have done something. You know, and then that side was saying, well, Bill Clinton could have like nipped Al-Qaeda earlier and we missed that. And, you know, and the one that really bothered me, I mean, there's all kinds of finger pointing, but the one that really bothered me were the self-righteous people that started saying things like, well, you know why this happened, right? I mean, you know why this happened? Because, you know, this is God punishing America. I mean, we're doing stuff wrong, and this is God coming and punishing us. God did this to us. And I'm like, why would you say that? I mean, that's very, very painful for people that are impacted by that. Why would we do that? You know why we do that? Because we're uncomfortable with suffering. We don't like suffering, and so we have to try to make sense of it. See, if I can put my finger and say, well, because of this, then this is why this happened, then we're like, oh, okay, I'll be good as long as I don't do that. I mean, this is what happens with Job. His friends that were brilliant, all of a sudden they become jerk friends. They start pointing the finger at him. They start pointing the finger. And it's interesting. They're like, hey, what did you do, Job? Because if I know what you did, then I can prevent this in my life. Recently, I had somebody, you know, telling me, kind of laying out a family member, asking me to pray for a family member that was dealing with lung cancer. And then they said, oh, and by the way, they never smoked a day in their life. And I thought that's normal for people to kind of throw that in if that's the case. Because, you know, it's like we have to defend. They have lung cancer, and I'm afraid they're going to be judged. Like, oh, they brought this upon themselves. And yet, we don't know how they got it. They just got lung cancer. And, why do we do that? Why do we have to defend? Because we're trying to make sense. Like, man, I get it if I smoke two packs a day for 30 years. I get that cancer's a part of my possibility, but, you know, we try to make sense of something. Oh, they deserve that. They should have known that was coming to them. Because, you see, we always want to think that we're in control. And one of the things suffering does is it causes us to point to God. God says, no, there's something bigger going on. In fact, C.S. Lewis put it this way. In one of his chronicles on suffering, he said, God whispers to us in our pleasures, he speaks to us in our conscience, but shouts to us in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. And what he's basically saying is, hey, we numb ourselves out. We numb ourselves out on life. And we try to remove any pain, and sometimes pain is the way that God gets our attention. Second application. Second thing suffering does for us, it reminds us of our smallness. It reminds us of our smallness. See, we live in an age where, you know, we're getting more and more powerful. I mean, we have more abilities today than anybody has ever had in the history of the world. We have more insurance policies because, you know, we're so important. We have to figure out our net worth and insure that. You know, we have, you know, strategic plans and immunizations that prevent us from being, you know, we're untouchable, we think, when it comes to any kind of sickness. And you know, we have collaborations, world collaborations to try to, you know, keep suffering to a minimum in the world. And listen, we live in a day and age where everything's at our fingertips. In fact, this device right here, I mean, I can do anything in my work that I need to do from this right here, from an iPad. I mean, I can research for when I teach. I can research right here on this iPad. I used to have, 15 years ago, I'd have to like call a librarian and hope I got somebody intelligent and with a big bun on their head, you know, hoping, man, this person's going to help me figure out whatever I need to know. You know, it's right here. Everything's at our fingertips. We have more power today, you know, right at our disposal. We think we're God. And then all of a sudden suffering comes and it's like it knocks us off our seat. And it reminds us that, hey, man, maybe I'm not all that. Maybe I really am human and I don't have as much power, or I'm not as untouchable as I thought that I was. And, it's interesting because I think in America, especially in the 21st century, I think we're a bit detached from history, if we're really honest. I mean, there were many, many, many people that came before us in the history of the world that had far, far, far greater, things that they went through, difficult things, and that never rocked their faith. And yet, for some reason, it rocks ours. Why is that? I think part of it is because we've gotten soft. We've gotten real soft. I mean, think about it. Some of you aren't going to like this. At any moment, any year, 20 to 30% of our population could just be wiped out by some disease that sweeps across our country. And you're going like, again, why did I come to church today? I mean, man, I thought this was supposed to make me feel better. No, this is actually reality. I'm bringing reality to you. Talk to anybody from the CDC, doctors. They'll tell you there's nothing keeping the influenza or some random strain, something that just sweeps across our country, our world, and knocks out 20, 30, 40%. We're due for one. In fact, if you look at the history of how these things have gone through cycles in the history of the world, you'll realize, man, we are due for something like this very, very soon. And yes, when it happens, I'll probably doubt God. God, how could you let this happen? I'm going to pray that God would, remove it, heal it, not protect my family. And I'm also going to hope that I'm not surprised by it. Because if I'm surprised, that means I'm detached from history. It means that I feel like I'm so invincible that there's nothing like that should ever touch me again. And really what it means is I'm really hardy, and I'm not. I'm really an unhardy person. I mean, when it comes to difficult things, I'm not as hardy as I think I am. And so my natural response is, oh, this is hard. So I just blame God. God, it's your fault. I point at God. See, when I suffer, I'm reminded I'm small. Doesn't matter how impressive I am to somebody else or friends or, to my family. I'm small. I'm small. In fact, I just want to pray right now. God, help us to see that we're small. And I'm kind of making suffering sound like it's a really good thing right now. It's really not. I just want to publicly say, I do not want any of it. I pray that you would help me learn through every other mode possible. Amen. All right, number three. I just felt like, man, suffering, I'm almost making it sound like this is really good when it comes to, it's not, it sucks, it's bad, I hate it. But it's a part of life. All right, and so number three, and listen, there are tons of apps for suffering. These are five we're looking at today. Suffering develops us. Suffering grows us. That's why we've got an icon for corn up there. This is this week's icon, because when we go through difficult stuff, it actually grows us. Every great person, including Jackie Robinson, who's ever been, has gone through very, very difficult circumstances. Very, very difficult things. Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King Jr., you name them. Very, very difficult things that actually put them in a position and prepare them to actually be the change. There's certain kinds of growth you can get when you're living on your bonus in the Caribbean on the beach. I like that kind of growth. I love that kind of growth. There's a different kind of growth that you get when you're going through the fire that you're never going to get when you're sitting on your couch reading your Bible or praying. It's only through in going through the experience that you're grown. I like both. I like one a little more than the other, but I like both. But one of the things that we realize is that suffering is the crucible through which we grow. And you will grow. I mean, if you're wondering, I've not grown. You have grown. Every single one of us, when we go through difficult times, we grow one way or the other. You either grow bitter or you grow better. Ask yourself, my last difficult moment, did I grow bitter or did I grow better? And it's interesting because it's always one way or the other. We can look throughout the Bible. One of the Old Testament greats, a guy by the name of King David. David had a lot of suffering in his life. I mean, he had no shortage of suffering. The unique thing about David is he created most of it. I mean, he made some really bad decisions, lousy, lousy decisions. Then later, he's this person of wisdom because he had gone through all of these experiences. And look at what it says in Psalm 119. It says, "It is good for me that I was afflicted, that I might learn your statutes." This is what he's saying to God. It's good for me that I was afflicted, that I might learn. Now, obviously, this was after the suffering took place, right? I mean, never does anybody except one person, which we'll look at in a moment, say, oh, I'm suffering, excellent, can't wait, love it, bring it on. We usually don't do that, but he realizes that, man, there's things I learned when I was suffering, looking back, that I would have never experienced or learned had I not gone through that affliction. Another big great in the Bible is a guy by the name of James. He's in the New Testament. We've looked at James some over the last few weeks. And James was the brother of Jesus, physical brother of Jesus. And James didn't believe right away. James had kind of a crisis of faith, you know, and you can understand why, right? I mean, your older brother's like, hey, I'm the light of the world. And he's like, really? Really? Come on, let's lay off that for a while. You know, and so you get why there's like some, you know, he's not quite getting it. But, and we don't really know when James, you know, became a believer, when he realized Jesus really was who he said he was. But I would assume if it wasn't at this moment or shortly before, this is what sealed it for him. He watched his brother, Jesus, die on the cross, suffer, die a painful death, go into a grave, 3 days later come back to life. Then he has a conversation with him. He's like, man, Jesus, I don't know everything that you taught. I don't get it all. But listen, I saw you die and I'm talking to you. I believe. I'm with you. I don't know. I'm going with your way because you did something I've never seen happen. Probably in that moment is when that took a turn. And then James becomes a leader in the church shortly after that. And James knew something about suffering. See, later on we read about James that he actually died a martyr's death. In fact, he was on a rooftop. He was chased to a rooftop, and he was actually killed because he would not recant his faith. And so he wouldn't denounce profession in Jesus, and they killed him. And so here's what he says. He says, dear brothers and sisters, when troubles come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. You're like, really? I should be rejoicing when troubles come my way? See, here's the thing about James. James had grown in that short time to such a level of spiritual maturity that even while he was suffering, he's like, yeah, you should count it a blessing. You should count it a blessing, because he understood that there's something that happens in that process. There's something that happens that grows in us. When you suffer, you can't fix it. When you suffer, you can't medicate or self-medicate. Even though we try, we do a lot of self-medicating. He's like, the only thing you can do is endure it. And when we endure, it actually produces something. He goes on. He says, for you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. He says, only when your faith is tested, your endurance, your ability to persevere through has a chance to grow. He says, so let it grow. For when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect. Perfect meaning whole, complete, not like without sin or never making a wrong mistake. He says, perfect in the sense of wholeness and complete, needing nothing. So James is saying, man, when you're going through a hard road, if you're in a hard road right now, know that your faith is growing and gaining endurance. And there's a character that's being developed in you. There's this aptitude that's being developed in you that the next time you go through something difficult, you're going to have a greater sense of hopefulness, a greater positive attitude. There's something being built into you that there's no other way you can get except in going through the fire that you're currently in. And so this is one of the upsides. This is one of those cool power things that God uses the situation and moment to build into us. Another thing that suffering does for us is it enables us to feel. It enables us to feel. You know, when I'm suffering, man, I feel it. It hurts. I feel the pain. I mean, there's all kinds of enzymes that are going through my body. I feel certain things that I don't feel other times. I mean, there's nerve, processes happening that I just don't get when I'm playing Xbox on my couch. Seriously. They're very different. I mean, as enjoyable as that is, when I'm suffering, when I'm feeling something, that's not pleasant, it actually grows. I realize something different. This week, I noticed this. I was actually driving somewhere. It was like that 95-degree day that was so hot, that we haven't had many of this summer. And I just walked out of my car one moment, and I'm like, I'm dying here. I mean, it's so hot. And I was kind of in this is dress up for me. So I was dressed up, and I'm in jeans, and I'm like, I'm dying today. And I realized I live a cush life. I go from an HVAC house to an HVAC car to an HVAC Starbucks to an HVAC office. And those little moments where I have to endure, the heat, I'm dying. I'm suffering. It's terrible, man. And I realized that, there are certain things the man-made comforts of our world actually protect us against. And sometimes I have to endure those things, even things like heat. And when I do that, it actually taps into something inside of me. I actually feel something. And it's almost like we create these little safe cocoons of our world so we don't have to feel anything ever. I'm like, if I can have a personal air conditioner, I even have a fan. Went to D.C. when you had a fan around my neck, just blowing air up at my head, my face, because I didn't like the heat. We put all these comforts around us. Speaking of football, big football day, I saw an interesting story with Jim Kelly recently. Jim Kelly's the former quarterback of the Bills. And what's unique about Jim Kelly is he played in four Super Bowls and lost all of them. All right, and so that's always the topic that comes up. And, of course, that's what was being asked here. And here's what he said. He said, people always ask, would you rather win one time or go four times and lose? It's a hard question, he said, but to be honest with you, I'd rather go four times and lose. And I thought, what a weirdo. I mean, no wonder he lost. He's a loser, right? I mean, he wants to lose instead of win. And then I thought, well, no, actually, I think there's a little depth to that. And so I looked at it again, read it again. You can read it over and over. I thought, there is actually a lot of depth to that. See, it's one thing when you go to the big game, you're like, woo, going to the Super Bowl. He did it like this. Woo, going to the Super Bowl. And he's like, you know, put all the hard work in, discipline, pain, you know, bruises on my body. Woo, we won. He said, that's one thing, but then to say, woo, going to the Super Bowl, and then you put all the hard work in, the pain, the bruises, the discipline, and crash, we lose. And then, you know, next year, woo, going to the Super Bowl again, four times to go through that process. He said, you know, if I can be honest, I think I'd rather go four times. I think I'd rather have the exuberation, the feeling, that sense of, yeah, it's, you know, I'm not guaranteed anything, but man, I'm going to the big deal four times. There's something that I feel when I'm there. You know, it's one of the reasons I hate funerals. I hate funerals. I hate going to funerals. I mean, I do a lot of funerals, but I hate them because, you know, it reminds me of something. It reminds me that I'm human. I sit there and I'm reminded that my life is very, very fragile and that I actually feel things. And sometimes I wire the feeling right out of my life. And in those moments, I feel. Last thing suffering does is it points to a bigger picture. Points to a bigger picture. Whatever difficulty you're in right now. And listen, if you're not in a difficulty, you should be rejoicing. I mean, if you're not, you don't have a difficult thing going, you should be like jumping up and down, man, it's so exciting. I don't have that going on right now because somebody next to you probably does. And as I said, likely there's something coming your way at some point. But in your difficulty, wherever there is suffering, it should point to a bigger picture, meaning, you know, when you're divorced, which is at least according to research, one of the most, you know, one of the most stressful, agonizing things, even worse than the death of a spouse, because of the ripping, because of the tearing of that relationship, it should be pointing to a bigger picture. You just begin to step back and you go, oh my word, gosh, marriage really is a sacred, sacred thing. Because it's actually modeling this voluntary union that God has with us. And so when God says, I hate divorce, what he's really saying is I hate the tearing. I hate the ripping that takes place. It affects lives. I hate that because I hate what it feels like when my children are ripped apart or severed in relationship with me. See, it mirrors this bigger reality. And whatever you might be going through, we have to ask ourselves, what's the bigger picture that's playing out right here? What's the bigger role of what I'm experiencing? What's going on with that and the bigger narrative of what God might be doing? You know, Job goes through 30 chapters of this. 30 chapters of his friends kind of pointing the finger, saying, hey, what'd you do? You must have done something. God would not come to you and just, you know, inflict this stuff on you. I mean, you surely, tell us, Job, what did you do? I mean, surely you did something. I mean, this doesn't just happen. And Job kind of begins to, you know, somewhere crosses the line and begins questioning God. I mean, he begins kind of becoming accusatory in his tone. He begins kind of almost pointing the finger, saying, God, yeah, what did I do, God? I mean, almost like he's superior all of a sudden. Like everybody else, man, there's people worse than me that have it better than me right now. Why don't they suffer a little bit? Why am I the one? And he's just looking for answers. All of a sudden, God answers. It's really fascinating because God answers. Now, it's fascinating when God answers because usually in suffering moments, we usually don't get an answer or a clear, like, why did this happen or how does this fit into, like, way down the road? I mean, usually that's a long time in the past before you even understand, hey, here's maybe why this happened. Job gets an answer right here. Job gets an answer in chapter 38. It says, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkens the counsel by words without knowledge? Dress for action like a man, Job. I will question you and you make it known to me. Where were you, by the way, when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you understand this. I mean, God's kind of like, whoa, boy, hang on here. I mean, you're getting into territory, Job, that I'm not sure you want to get into. I mean, you know, I get you're in pain right now. And you see, when you're in pain, you think you have all the answers, you know how everything's supposed to go. But listen, I'm going to ask you some questions about the beginning of time. Can you tell me who determined its measurements? Surely you know. I mean, come on, Job, you know that. I mean, you were there, right? I mean, you get how everything works. It's almost like God's sarcastic right here. Or who stretched the line upon the earth? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy, Or who shut the sea doors, Job? Surely you know that. When it burst out of the womb. I mean, when I made the clouds its garment with thick darkness, its swaddling band. I mean, he just goes on and on, you know, saying, hey, the intricacies of creation, where you were there, right? I mean, because you seem to know everything. You need to seem to know how all this should be handled. And Job just kind of backs down. Two chapters later, here's what we see Job saying. It says, then Job answered and said, behold, oh man, I'm of small account. What shall I answer you? And then he's like, oh, I lay my hand on my mouth. I've spoken once and I will not answer twice. But I will proceed no further. It's almost like Job's like, whoa, yeah, I'm really small in the grand scheme of things. And yeah, I think I know exactly how things should play out. But yeah, I'm seeing that you actually have a narrative way bigger than I ever dreamed that's playing out. I actually begin to realize that there's a God who's playing, you know, who's playing for stakes that are much higher than I would ever play for. And maybe that's part of what God's doing in this moment. And as I read all this, I find this book, the Bible, this is my Bible. My Bible's on here. This book actually brings me great comfort. I don't know about you, but some of the best applications in times where I'm struggling come from the Bible. And God, partly because God's kind of like suffering. You want to talk about suffering? Listen, you feel like somebody's, you know, turned their back on you. I know what that's like. God's like, I get that. I've been there. You know, you feel like you've been through an unfair trial, maybe a custody battle, a divorce proceeding, whatever it might be, a litigation. God's like, I've been there. I've been in unfair trials. I've been on the other end of that. You know, you ever feel like you're abandoned? God's like, I get that too. I've actually experienced that. Here's an interesting one. You ever wonder, like, God even likes you anymore? God, do you even like me anymore? That's a story for another time, but God's like, I get that. Jesus says, I was on the cross, and I remember crying out, my God, why? Why have you forsaken me? I mean, do you even look down at me anymore with love or admiration? It's like God saying, yeah, I get the cancer. You know, chemo treatment, it's hard. I mean, I've been there. I've had nails through my hands, through my feet. I've had a cat of nine tails drug down my back 39 times. It ripped muscle off of my back. And yes, even the death of a child, which no parent should ever have to endure. No parent should ever have to bury their own child. And he says, yeah, I had a son. His name was Jesus. I sat and watched while he died. I get it. I get the frustration. I get the anger. I get it. God, there is not really a tidy little neat bow to put on top of this morning. But what there is there's a reality. There's a reality that we're not alone. I mean, if we're struggling this morning, if we're suffering through something, if we're enduring something, if there's really some difficult circumstances going on right now, it brings us great comfort to know that someone else has been there. And it's not just some random person, but God, it's actually you, the creator of all the universe. You say, I get it. I've been there. I've suffered in that way. I can identify with whatever it is you go through. I went through all of it. And God, I'm thankful that you give us the grace to endure, to grow, to be taken to new places when things are so rough, when we feel like there's not a way out. And God, I know for some of us today, we're kind of disconnecting a bit. We're like, you know, life's great for me right now. I'm good. Well, man, let us celebrate that then. Let us be excited and just be, you know, if we're on top of the world, man, let us just be thankful that we're there today, because there will be a different day. And there may be somebody right next to us who's just at the worst of places. God, if that's where we find ourselves today, may we just experience you in these moments. Even these next moments, will you know that you're there, that you understand it, you get it? And God, may you, in the way that only you can do, even begin to take us to an entirely new place. May you bring a healing. May you bring an encouragement so that we will never give up, so we'll never give up, so that we will never give up.